Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, where you never know what's coming with the Jedi Masters. I am one of the Jedi Masters here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is always, the stupendous, the wonderful, the magnificent, John Mills.
Well, thank you, the glorious Matthew Rushing. It's a pleasure to be back for Aggressive Negotiations, yet another wonderful exploration of all things Star Wars.
Yeah, and actually, we're gonna really explore some Star Wars tonight, John, because we're doing something, and this is where we're throwing you off. We're starting a book club.
Ooh, better than Oprah's book club. I can guarantee
that's
you
right.
That. Yes,
that's right, because we're only gonna cover Star Wars books.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Which is the only kind of book club I want to be a part of, honestly.
For the most part, I hear you. But I think the shocking thing for people is where we're going to start. And we've been batting this around back and forth with each other for a while, and we thought it would be fun to start in a very unusual place. And we're going to go with The Rising Force, which is the first book in the Jedi Apprentice series, which was a young adult series, actually. And it focused on Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn before episode one, giving us our first taste of those characters. And the first book is written by Dave Wolverton. The rest of the series is written by Jude Watson, who is a fantastic author. And this series dives into these characters in, I think, a very fun and interesting way. And what I like about it the most, John, is the way that it helps build into the characters the things that we see in the films, especially the Obi-Wan character and the Qui-Gon character. And specifically with Qui-Gon, a character that we just didn't get to spend a lot of time with in the movies anyway. So to me, and I know for you, this is a real joy because those are the two characters that we love the most in Star Wars.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody knows I'm a huge Qui-Gon fan. Always will be, always have been. But you mentioned how this is a young adult book. And what, before we even get into the Star Wars-ness of everything, you know, what it explores and the characters, for me, it's a really interesting time capsule in the sense of this is what young adult meant back in 1999 before Hunger Games came along. Young adult has changed since. This now would read to most audiences as a kid's book. There would be that distinction that this is younger, even younger than young adult audiences. Whereas back in 99, this was the young adult audience.
Yeah, and I think that this is kind of like in the mid-grade to middle school. But you're absolutely right. And I want to tackle that right up front. I don't think that this book reads like a children's book, honestly. I didn't get the sense that I was reading for kids. It just felt like a good, honest Star Wars story.
Yeah, the only thing where I would say that it comes across as a quote-unquote kid's book is the fact that it doesn't it states all of its meanings plainly as opposed to being more nuanced in the way that it expresses its themes. Not a knock on it. It's just a different way of telling the story. You know, it flat out says Obi-Wan felt this way. You know, it tells you what the character is feeling as opposed to having an event and having you sit there and say, oh, okay, well, Obi-Wan must feel this way because he said, you know, like it's that sort of distinction there. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a great Star Wars story in the sense that it feels like, the old 1940s serials that informed Star Wars. Whereas, like, this is in the continuing adventures of Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Join them this week as they face the Hutts on a freighter bound for the what was the name of the planet? The agriculture planet.
Bandamir.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. As they're off on their way to Bandamir, you know, and that's, you know, it's a swashbuckling sort of thing. And it's also very interesting to find out, I mean, you and I had both known this because it was part of the official stuff, but that Obi-Wan had basically washed out. Like, they were sending him off. He wasn't going to be a Jedi. And he was just going to go off and join the Agriculture Corps, which is even, even that's interesting because none of us growing up would have thought that the Jedi would have had, like, an academy where they would have said, nah, you're not going to be a Jedi, but we're not going to set a Force user loose, so you're just going to help us grow crops.
I think you're absolutely right. I love your beginning part. It reminded me of the Clone Wars, like the big opening last week, and that's exactly what happens in the story. Is you kind of opened up and you're at the temple and Obi-Wan is training and he is 12 years old, about to turn 13. And the moment you turn 13 and nobody's picked you to be their Padawan, you are transferred to another section of the Jedi Order, such as the Agricultural Corps, which he would be a part of then.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. What it did to me is it really opened up the framework of the Jedi that the ways of the Force aren't just meant to be channeled through aggressive negotiations and a lightsaber and mind tricks, that the Force is about all living things, and you get this sense, and I love it here, that the Jedi respect the rest of the living Force, which through things that are grown for food and lots of other areas. And so that's what I really like about the way this book opens, is it opens up our view of what the Jedi Order is. And it's not just a bunch of warrior monks, but it's also a bunch of other people that are dedicated to the preservation of life in many different ways.
Right. And there's also the very interesting fact that these students are, I mean, first and foremost, you get what, you know, hardcore fans have always accepted, you know, because one of the big things with the prequels was, I thought Yoda was Obi-Wan's master because he said that, you know, the Jedi master who instructed me, what is this all about? And, well, you have it right here. Yoda's instructing Obi-Wan. He's teaching him in our very first encounter. Granted, he's teaching a large group of students, but he is, and this is a taste of what we're going to get in Attack of the Clones, where Yoda's basically conducting a class of the kids, and, you know, specifically kids that don't have masters yet. And so, you know, you see that bit of structure thrown in there as well. So that very much feels like it has the air of, oh, well, this is what Obi-Wan was talking about when he was younger, Yoda teaching him. But you also have this sense, and Wolverton does a really good job of making you curious throughout the book as to why Qui-Gon is so reluctant to take a Padawan. And it adds a layer. It makes him even more interesting that he's had this bad experience in the past. You don't know quite what it is, and it keeps teasing it out.
And that's what I like too, is that the series, you get the sense that it's going to be serialized, so that each book is going to give you hints about what's going to come, but there will be a specific story that we will kind of either wrap up or wrap up enough so that you'll continue into the next one. But they're really doing a good job of building each of the characters. And so what we get set out here in this series, which I don't think anybody expected when they probably picked this up, Obi-Wan is about to not be a Jedi Knight, and Qui-Gon Jinn is somebody who is even more moody and reluctant than you picture him in episode one.
Yeah.
And even more removed from the what might be considered normalcy for a Jedi master at that point. And so I feel like what they've done is create a wonderful sense of, okay, we have somewhere to go, because we didn't just start where everybody wanted us to start. We did what George Lucas did, and we started at a place where you don't expect.
Right.
And so we have somewhere to take these characters. And I really enjoyed, specifically you talking about Yoda teaching these students and how interesting it is, because we open up on the book, and it's Obi-Wan fighting basically his nemesis at the school, the kid that loves to pick on him. Bruck is his name.
Yes.
And they're having this fight, this lightsaber battle, and he can sense in Bruck this darkness because of the anger of this fight and how it's going. And his impulse, Obi-Wan's impulse that he's having to fight, is to match that anger with his own. He's having to learn to resist that. And what's so interesting is watching what I love that Dave Wolverton does in this book is give you an idea that maybe Obi-Wan wasn't the wrong master for Anakin, because he had a few of the same issues when he was a kid. And obviously he learns to work through them. So maybe he isn't quite the wrong person to be training. I really like that. In this first book, you get a sense that Obi-Wan has experiences that would allow him to hopefully have an impact on somebody like Anakin.
Sure, sure. But although I think that Brooke clearly communicated the darkness inside because he has a red lightsaber.
That's true, which was very weird.
Yeah, let's tip the hat to saber lore changing over time. Because the thing is that, speaking of saber lore changing over time, I remember the Jedi, it wasn't Jedi Power Battles. It was, there was a PlayStation game with Jedi where one of the council members had a red lightsaber. And I remember thinking at the time, seeing it and going, wow, that's really cool. And then, of course, like the whole lightsaber thing is explained. I'm like, well, I guess that doesn't count anymore. And so that it's interesting to see where the thinking was and how controlled the expanded universe stuff was at any given time. But also, I think, really speaks to something we've talked about before, that when Lucas was steering the ship, it was connected, you know, mainly, but for the details like that, it was completely open to Lucas coming in one day and saying, no, that's not the way it is anymore.
Right.
But we published a book with this. Okay. So I don't care. Retcon it, you know, like whatever, you know, sell another book, change the color or something like that.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Right. Because the red lightsaber thing, you're like, oh, what? Huh? What I really like here, too, is just the way that this connected with something we'd seen recently in Rebels and Twin Suns, where fighting Bruck, Obi-Wan realizes, well, he's just going to be angry, so all I need to do is defend, and he will tire himself out.
Right.
And he has this great conversation with Yoda, where Yoda says, to defeat an enemy, you do not have to kill. Defeat the rage that burns in him, and he is your enemy no longer. Rage, the true enemy, is. And I really liked the way that I could see that play out throughout the rest of the Star Wars galaxy, and specifically in Twin Suns, because that's exactly what Obi-Wan does with Maul in that episode. And it's fantastic to see him learning that lesson here. And you know, the biggest compliment I really want to give to this book here about midway through our episode, nothing in this feels like it can't really exist within canon except for that red lightsaber. Like, you take that out, you go back and you fix this book in ebook form and make it blue, no problem. Like, everything in this feels like it fits within canon.
Well, considering the fact that they've already had a Kyber crystal conflict within canon, you could retcon Brooke's saber very easily. I mean, you know, whatever. I agree with you. This would feel at home even now, in the extended universe. And the biggest accomplishment of this book, I think, is that I'm reading it now, almost 20 years after Phantom Menace, with all of this other stuff that's overwritten things, with all of this other stuff that is change things, with a story group now that's controlling all of this stuff that happens. But this, to me, is exactly the way the expanded universe should function. I can pick this book up. I have no expectation that it's going to overwrite anything that is happening on screen. if it impacts something that's on screen, you know what it does? Because it tells me more about Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and informs their relationship. Perfect. I can pick this up this many years later and I can read it and I can have a good time and I can say, you know what? I'm glad I read that. That was fun. Yeah. And that is exactly, that's the sweet spot, man. Like, it's fun. It's good. It's enjoyable. That's all I want. I don't need everything to be this big ornate. Well, you don't understand how the only reason I harp on it is because we mentioned it a couple of minutes ago, but like, you don't understand how sabers work because you didn't read, the Ahsoka book. And so the crystals do this and the crystals do that. This is a book where I can read it and enjoy it. And it informs without having any sort of baggage to it.
Again, we're playing in a part of the universe that, well, nobody's going to play in anymore.
Yeah, probably not, sadly.
And it's rife for the opening. And honestly, I don't understand why you don't go through these books at this point and just change a couple of things here and there like that, make it consistent with canon, and just make them canon and reprint them, you know?
Like, yeah.
Give everybody an opportunity to go back and read these, because you're absolutely right. It's filling in the spaces with these characters that makes them even more dynamic when you watch the film. So is it essential that I read this? No. But does it add something and expand my view of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, Qui-Gon Jinn?
Right.
When I watch The Phantom Menace now? Absolutely. And
right.
And it also expands the way then that I view those relationships that happen with Anakin and everything down the road. So I really like this, specifically too, learning that Obi-Wan and Yoda have a very close relationship here at the temple. Yoda seems to take special care of Obi-Wan because they have this conversation, he learns
right.
that Qui-Gon's going to be looking for a master, or he learns that Qui-Gon's going to be coming to the temple looking for maybe a Padawan. And Obi's like, well, he's seen me fight. He is not going to want me. And Yoda's like, I sense a kinder destiny for you.
Right. And the thing is that even that lends support. And to speak to your point about how, it can inform and flesh things out, it doesn't overwrite and it doesn't forcibly make me read the character a certain way or an event a certain way. These are a series of events where if I have a read of Qui-Gon, maybe it supports it, maybe it challenges it, but it buoys it. It makes me think more about the character. And to speak to the Yoda thing, Yoda taking a special interest in Obi-Wan takes it a step further, because the very first conversation we ever see on screen between Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan is Obi-Wan mentions, but Master Yoda says I should be mindful of the future. So we have this support here that Yoda is still close to Obi-Wan. He might not be his direct master, but he is still taking, an interest in him, that there are still conversations, that maybe when Obi-Wan's back at the temple, he goes and Yoda talks to him. You know, they have like a heart to heart, like he's a special student that Yoda's always taken a liking to. And, spend some extra time with him.
That's also furthered by Attack of the Clones, where
right,
Darth Tyrannus or Count Dooku says, Master Obi-Wan, you disappoint me. Yoda holds you in such high regard, And so
right.
You feel this sense that Yoda, and this is one of the things I think that always made Obi-Wan Kenobi special, in general, is that you got that sense that for him, Obi-Wan was a Jedi in the mold that he wished all Jedi would kind of be in. And that sees fruition throughout the rest of the series. And I really like that because, too, Obi-Wan has this conversation with him and he realizes that he feels like, look, even if I don't become a knight, I've earned Yoda's respect, and that's a great gift,
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he goes and does something stupid by beating the crap out of Bruk. Well, actually, neither of them win, but Bruk uses that as an opportunity to get Obi-Wan basically shipped off the agricultural corps early, because of his anger management issues.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because it, you know, it forwards it and it moves it along without feeling like it's utilitarian. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like a natural progression of things that are happening. Like it, you know, it doesn't feel like it's forcing the story to move forward. Mm-hmm. And when he is on that voyage, when he's on that journey, it's the huts that he runs across feel so completely, and obviously Lucas wasn't taking the very keen eye toward the expanded materials that he would as the prequels moved forward, but these huts feel like they could very easily function within the Clone Wars series. And I think you have to give Wolverton a lot of credit for obviously understanding what Lucas was going for with the huts, that it was not what we all thought the huts functioned like based on our encounter with Jabba the Hutt in Return of the Jedi, because that doesn't really get overwritten even by his appearance in The Phantom Menace. This is our first real exploration of the huts that feels like what they later came to be with Zero and the machinations of like the Hutt Council and stuff like that.
Yes.
That feels legit.
Yes, absolutely. You're ringing the bell here that I wanted to make sure that we touched on, but that this feels like the wonderful world building for the world of the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
The way in which businesses are becoming more and more corrupt, corporations taking over, not giving a flying flip about their employees, not understanding the symbiosis that we hear, you know, Obi-Wan talk about in episode one. And it's laying that foundation and giving you a little piece of the pie here, like you said, with the huts. And absolutely, this feels like, you know, the Clone Wars crime syndicates that we see with Black Sun and the Pikes and the huts and all of these people. And, you know, the world in which the bounty hunters exist in the undercurrent, you know, the ways in which the Republic is slowly finding itself pulled under because of greed of corporations and the greed of people to take over. And the lights that the Jedi are, like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon in this story, well, they're few and far between. I mean, they're maybe 10,000 Jedi. So
I keep saying they because I'm so used to living in the story group time. But he keeps expressing what we come to see in terms of what Obi-Wan has learned about the symbiont circle. You rang the bell there when you talked about, you know, the crime syndicates and the corruption in everything. Just thinking about the fact that on this ship, there are, just like the Naboo and the Gungans, there are two cultures that don't understand each other. And then they are brought together to repel a common enemy. And it's a learning experience that you can see immediately inform years later when Obi-Wan stands in front of the Gungan Council saying, "You and the Naboo form a symbiont circle. Surely what affects one affects the other." Like you can see here, this is the moment where Obi-Wan first learns that lesson.
And what's great here too is, again, the teachings of Yoda specifically in Obi-Wan's life, you know, him learning about anger and fear and how they've been driving him, you know, and he thinks back to Yoda's teaching about how anger or fear specifically, you know, and the things you can't control and all of that, you know, befriend them, Yoda said. Look them in the eye without blinking. Use your faults as your teachers. And then rule you will, and you won't be ruled by them.
And yeah.
I really like that whole idea because, one, it's giving us an opportunity to dive into Jedi lore and how Jedi are raised. But it's also interesting to see the ways in which Obi-Wan is able to imbibe this in himself in a way that Anakin never will be able to.
Right.
And what's wonderful about the story, too, is that we realize, you know, Obi-Wan's been raised in the temple, but it's not like he's had this beatific life that, you know, everything's gone wonderful for him. Like, he was bullied as a kid, you know? I mean, it's not like he had just this wonderful life and the temple made everything hunky-dory and that's why he could follow the Jedi teachings. He, like everyone else, has had to make those teachings his own, just as, you know, for both of us, John, being men of faith, we have to continually make that faith a part of our lives or we let it go.
Right.
You know, like
it either informs who we are. It either informs who we are or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's absolutely. The choice right there. And seeing Obi-Wan deal with that choice is extreme. And even seeing him come to, you know what, though? I mean, this is what's crazy to me. OK, I'm sitting here bubbling praise on this book. I don't want anybody to go into it with the impression that they're going to sit down and they're going to read, something by Nabokov or something like that. Okay, this is
This isn't Stover's episode 3. Okay, that's
right.
right. That's not what we're saying.
It is a fun thrill, and obviously, it is tickled the fancy of two longtime fans, especially two longtime fans who love the prequels. So. That is the context in which we love this. But on top of all of that, what is really killing me about this conversation is the aftermath books. I will throw this up against any of the two aftermath books I've read or any of the three that you have. And I will say this is hands down better than any of them because it's got structure. It's got a sensible plot line. It's got actual character development that doesn't feel forced, and it's got something that informs without overwriting what happens on screen. Wow. That is done in a young adult book from 1999, what could not be accomplished in a series of books that were released from 2015 to 2017 that were geared toward adults. That is sort of a mind-blowing moment right there. Like, what is different about this landscape? They have a story group. They have people controlling things. They have basically like a quality review board. And this is written back in the wild space of Lucas. I just made a prequel, and in another 3 years, you're going to get Attack of the Clones. And honestly, like, some of the stuff in here is going to get overwritten, in a sense, by Attack of the Clones. You know, Red Lightsaber. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's what's so hard about this?
This is the thing that, you know, a few weeks back when we talked about books in the new canon and where to be successful and how, you mentioned the structure, the storytelling, and the focus. This has all of those. And I think that's what makes it successful. And we also, I think, as well, talked about the idea that even if a book isn't essential, that you feel rewarded for having read it.
Yes.
Because it informs the characters or the story or the films or the saga. And this is doing all of that. It's filling in joy about learning about the Jedi Order. It's connecting us with characters that we love and giving us more history with them so we can add things to what we watch later. And it's world building the world of the prequels before the prequels. So it's prequel to a prequel allowing us to experience what it was like before Palpatine is really pulling all of the strings. You know, I'm sure he's in the background. You know, you can read the Darth Plagueis book, you see how that was happening. But you're getting a sense of what this world was like and what the Jedi were like before they were fully under siege by the Dark Lord of the Sith, Darth Sidious. And it's a wonderful experience for that. And I'm absolutely with you that it's frustrating when that didn't happen in the new canon with something like Aftermath. But did happen with something like Bloodline or with Lost Stars or, Dark Disciple or Lords of the Sith, New Dawn, all of those books that really found their focus and were, you know, this is doing that. And what's fun about this, too, is that it's a quick read.
Yes, it is.
And it's a lot of fun. and it immediately makes you want to pick up the next book and see what happens, because it does kind of leave you on a cliffhanger, because as you said, it's continuing building that story about Qui-Gon Jinn, and we realize that his previous apprentice who turned to the dark side is the one who is causing the problems on the planet Bandamere where they're going. And I think that's fun. And you know what's great? This book doesn't immediately make Obi-Wan Qui-Gon's Padawan. It delays that gratification, but in a way that makes complete sense for the character of Qui-Gon and for Obi-Wan and everything that's been set up in this story. And I think that's the other thing that makes it really well done and really well written.
Yeah. It's tough, man. It's really tough because I think it would be fair to say I was incredibly surprised by this experience.
Yeah,
you too.
You'd never read these before, too.
No.
I mean, let's put that out there. I've read a few of these, but you'd never read any of them yet.
I was too cool for school back when these came out. I 99, I was old enough that I was still excited about the prequels, but at the same time, putting the young adult tag on a book back then would have been enough to keep younger Kessel Junkie away from it. To be like, no, that's for kids. That's for kids. I suppose I've embraced a larger view of the literature of the Star Wars galaxy.
Not just the dogmatic ideas of young Kessel Junkie.
Not just the dogmatic, narrow ideas of the story group. I'm sorry. I've been on a beating up the story group kick. I'm sorry, guys. I know you're trying your best. But, you deserve some criticism.
So let's kind of start to wrap this up a little bit, John. And the thing that I loved about this was that really brought this home for me was that the end, you know, they end up on this ship where we have two warring factions, basically two different mining groups, one led by the Hutts, the other led by another group. And they go back and forth. They end up having to land the ship on emergency on this water planet that has like very few islands.
Yeah.
They end up being attacked by these huge dragons. It's this crazy thing. And Obi-Wan has this experience in the Force of having to let go. And Qui-Gon says, "You did well. I felt the Force move in you." "It was astonishing," Obi-Wan said quietly. "I thought I understood its power, but I see that I had only glimpsed one corner of it and what it could do. For years, I thought myself worthy of it, but it was not until I recognized my own unworthiness of that power began to fill me." And the magnitude of that little conversation and what that says about something that, like you said, we're longtime fans and we love. The ideas of what that means for the Force and the Jedi and the connection that they have, and this almost biblical idea of it's not until you lose your life that you find it. That's kind of what Obi-Wan is saying here. And so all of that wrapped together, Wolverton understands the lore of Star Wars, and he understands the mysticism of Star Wars, and he understands the adventure of Star Wars. And every single part of that is here in this story. And like you said, I mean, we're not saying this is the greatest Star Wars book ever. We're saying it is a great Star Wars book.
Yes. I appreciate it for what it is. And since it is a young adult book, to add on, the only thing I can possibly add on to everything you just said, which is perfect, is imagine, and this is something I think that is easily lost, especially going forward as the nature of things change and all of that stuff, what is clearly communicated in that conversation you cite is the idea of humility and the importance of humility.
Yes.
The importance that Obi-Wan, the key difference between him and somebody like Brooke isn't just that Brooke's a jerk, but is the fact that Obi-Wan comes to realize the importance of not thinking you're the greatest thing in the world. And I think that that is the type of lesson that has the Lucas stamp of approval all over it, that he would want to teach a kid with his movies, is it's not about control. It's not about power. It's about accepting who you are and the fact that you're not going to be Superman. And that's the moment where you're going to find out what makes you Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I think that's a perfect place to kind of wrap this up. I don't know. So if there was some kind of rating scale we might put on this, you know, do you want to just give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down for people?
You know what?
Netflix scale?
If that's good enough for Netflix, it's good enough for me.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Yeah.
I suspect the same from you.
I'd say we could give it, you know, two thumbs up. So I definitely give it two thumbs up.
Perfect.
I think this book is totally worth reading. It's a lot of fun, and I can't wait to continue on with the series throughout the year with you, John, as we look into these books some more. And, you know, I've only read a few of them, so there's definitely going to get to a point where I haven't read any of them yet. And I'll be like, yeah, I'm really excited to continue on in this story. But
yes.
Gosh, if somebody wanted to catch up with you more and talk about some of these things with you, where would they do that?
Well, you can just look for Kessel Junkie, kesseljunkie.com, or I'm Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. You can find me right here on the Nerd Party Network. I'm also on a show called Great Shot Kid, where we explore the work of Star Wars creators and stuff that they've done outside of the Star Wars galaxy. It's a lot of fun. You can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And you can find me co-hosting Stage 9 over on the Trek.fm network with Mike Schindler, where we, you know, what I said about Great Shot Kid, that's what we're doing for Star Trek creators. So, Matt, that's where they can find me. Where can they find you?
Well, John, you can find me here on the network doing Owlpost, a Harry Potter podcast with Dre Kaufman, as we talk about all things Harry Potter, because we're walking through each and every chapter of Harry Potter together, and it's been a blast. We're almost done with the first book. We've got about four chapters left at this point, so hope everybody will check that out and join us in our read-along. And hey, if you've never read the series, if you've read it a million times, it's the perfect show for you, so check it out. I'm also on the Trek FM network. You can find me doing The Orb with Chris Jones, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine there. That's a lot of fun. I'm also doing the General Geek Show there, the 602 Club. We're covering tons of fandoms, Star Wars included. In fact, we even have a Star Wars special feed that you can find, and that's at Star Wars 602 Club Collection. All of that's on iTunes, so make sure you check that out. I'm on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm also on Instagram at MRushing02. So make sure you check all those out. John, the one last thing that we need to mention is we are doing this wonderful review contest on iTunes. We've gotten some great reviews recently, and so I just wanted to call those out for people. They need to be given the shout-out for giving us the review and being entered to win that exclusive T-shirt that we're going to be giving away. So, but we had a recent review from Maddie113. They said it was a great Star Wars podcast. It's like talking to Star Wars friends. They gave us 5 stars. Palpatander said it was a great discussions and funny. 5 stars. They said that listening to John and Matt discuss different Star Wars topics and include their own unique styles and humor has been so much fun. So that's really appreciate that.
And I also want to say you're welcome. As you mentioned in your review, you're welcome for the laugh at Hot Tub of Midichlorians.
Yes.
I think that our own unique brand of humor is what we truly bring to the Star Wars
that
podcasting universe.
And this was a great review, too. It says, simply the best, 5 stars, Red Nika, 1971. And this one was pretty special. They said, Star Wars has been with me my entire life as a fan and a professional. I can honestly say Aggressive Negotiations is simply the best Star Wars podcast you will find here or anywhere else. John and Matthew do a flawless job of hosting original topics week after week, balancing spontaneous fun and deep thoughts into casual, convenial tone and belies the hard work that these two actually do putting out a weekly content they create. I would be remiss, they say, if I did not point out that anyone who calls themselves a Star Wars fan should subscribe ASAP.
Yeah, all of those reviews are great. And thank you so much for the kind words. As we love to say, we're doing this for the love of the game. And the idea that people enjoy it this much means a lot to us because we are doing this because we like to think that people are enjoying it. So thank you very much for listening. And thank you for your kind words. That's really cool, man. It's really touching.
John, is it dusty in here?
A little bit, man. Yeah. A little bit.
Wow. I think there's only one thing left to say, John. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.